Welcome everybody to this evening's teleseminar called How to Live an Authentic Life in an Inauthentic World. My name is Damien Sen and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. Now it's a very fertile subject matter that we're discussing this evening, and it's one of international interest and relevance, and because of that we've had people sign up for the call in 9 different countries. So whether you join the call in Belgium, Canada, Finland, France, Ireland, New Zealand, South Africa, United Kingdom or the US, I'd just like to welcome you to the call and just acknowledge your just sharing your time with us this evening. Now very shortly I'll be also introducing our very special guest, Dr. Topher Morrison, and I'll be spending a bit of time, you know, just getting Topher's take on authenticity in the world. And before I do that, I'll just actually give you a little bit of information on how this call is going to run this evening. Our call will run for around an hour, and over the course of the hour I will really dig into Topher's beliefs and thoughts on authenticity. I'll also have an opportunity to find out about his own path and story to authenticity. And also I will be asking various questions that were submitted through the peopleyoushouldmeet.com website when people were signing up for the call. So if you have submitted a question, do listen out for it, because I will be asking Topher some of the questions that actually came through the site. Towards the end of the call, I will be asking Topher about his upcoming seminar in London called The Mental Game of Life, which is happening this weekend. And I'll also, if we have time, open the call up for any further questions. Okay, so without further ado, I'd just like to take a moment to introduce Topher. Now, Topher is a best-selling author of the book Stop Chasing Perfection and Settle for Excellence. He is an international speaker and he makes regular visits here to the UK. And he's a doctor of clinical hypnotherapy and also a master trainer of neuro-linguistic programming. Now, through the work, I think I've known Topher for a couple of years now, and I guess through the work that I do, I have the opportunity to see many different speakers and many different authors come to the UK and share their knowledge and wisdom. And I've been watching Topher speak for a number of years, and I've always been blown away with the energy that Topher brings to his work and the enthusiasm and also his real commitment for actually helping people out on their journeys. So I think like Topher really is a man who speaks and lives what he talks. So I think there's no better person really on the circuit to talk about this topic on authenticity. So with that, I'd just like to give a very big welcome to Dr. Topher Morrison. How are you doing, Topher?
I'm good, buddy. How are you, man?
I'm good.
Yep, life well?
Life is going well, actually. It's had a brilliant start to 2008, so yeah, some really exciting things on the go.
Cool.
Excellent. So I just thought I'd start the call off, Topher, just by really exploring this concept of authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, authenticity means different things to different people. So I just really wanted to kick off by asking, you know, what does authenticity actually mean to you?
For me, you know, authenticity is just, it's about being true to yourself, it's about being true to others, it's about getting rid of the facades, it's about, you know, living as true to what you feel in your heart as possible. You know, I think every day we are faced with the opportunity of speaking what's on our mind and what's in our heart. And every day, the majority of us, including myself, deny that urge, and we go down an inauthentic path. And, you know, sometimes the more mild forms of it can be things like being just politically correct. Sometimes they're little white lies. And then the more severe ones are deceptions and denial and things like that. So for me, authenticity, I guess, would be allowing your voice to communicate the thoughts and the feelings that are in your heart and in your mind and in your soul, which rings to be true for you.
Okay.
And I got a lot of great stories and examples of areas of my life where I've failed miserably at doing that.
Fantastic, because that was actually my next question. Before we actually hear the horror stories, just wondering if you could actually talk about the whole, I guess probably the whole journey really of finding your own authentic voice And I guess in doing the work that you do, I guess there's a natural inclination to become more and more authentic. So I was just wondering if you could also just discuss the process towards being more authentic as well when you do share your story.
Sure. Okay. Well, there was a lot of powerful presuppositions in that statement / question that you just said. One was that I've recognized it and I've completed the journey. And believe me, I think the only way I could even remotely sleep tonight after giving a talk on authenticity is if I started by letting all of the listeners know that I am just as inauthentic as anybody else. And you know, there's no illusion here. You know, I realize that. I'll give you some examples. It was 3 days ago, I had an opportunity to be completely and 100% totally authentic and truthful to somebody, and I chickened out. I took the easy way out. So I think I need to start with that and just cleanse myself and say, hey, you know what? I'm just an insecure, shy, scared person just like everybody else is on the planet, and I'm doing the best I can with the resources I have. And I also want to give myself credit. The one thing that you said earlier was you said that if there's anybody that has a right to talk about authenticity, it's me. And I really took that as a tremendous compliment, Damien. And that was one where, maybe even to my surprise, I was able to sit there and go, you know what, I think he's right. And that felt really good for me to be able to say that as well and feel that. Because I do feel like I've made a tremendous journey and a path with regard to being authentic. I'll go through a real quick Reader's Digest version of it. It's written in my book, Settle for Excellence, but I'll just kind of go through it real quickly here because we've got so many questions to get to. 1 hour is not going to be enough time. So in a nutshell, here's what happened. At a very young age, right around 2021, I think, I got involved in and I purchased a personal development franchise from a best-selling author whom everybody on this phone call probably knows. And within 9 months of owning that franchise, I was about $85,000 in debt. I was eating every third day because I was so broke. I didn't own a car. My mom and dad bought me a car, which was a little crappy Toyota Corolla that didn't even have matching paint on all of the panels. And I would park around the corner to all the companies that I would go talk to so they wouldn't be able to see see what I was driving. If I went to somebody's house, I would never park in their garage or driveway. And I was trying to put on, and I had one suit that I wore every single day, just changed the shirt, and maybe the tie to fool them, I guess. And I lived for 9 months in the most inauthentic, hypocritical form that I could, not just because I was doing what most people do, which is acting like they're more successful than they really are, but I went one step further, and I actually had the nerve to tell people that if they did what I did, they'd be successful too. And that was, for me, just like the biggest hypocrisy I could have ever lived. It was a miserable, exhausting life because it was just one lie on top of another, you know, on top of another, and it was miserable.
Because that is interesting, because there is a quip that goes around the personal development movement that people say you should fake it till you make it. What do you...
Yeah. I think it's a load of crap.
Okay.
Yeah, because at least for me personally, it sure as heck didn't work out. Maybe I just didn't fake it enough, but I never made it with the faking it part. You know, I mean, there's a certain level of, you know, fake it till you make it. Yeah, I guess I think what the spirit of that message is, you know, be willing to take chances and take risks. But I don't think what the spirit of the message is act like somebody that you're not repeatedly over and over until you can fool everybody. And I think that's what a lot of people in the self-help world have done with that. I did, that's for damn sure.
Yeah.
And thankfully,
and
then,
so you kind of didn't work for you.
No, it didn't work at all.
Cool.
I had two friends, thankfully, who could see through the ruse. They saw that I was losing weight, and you know, every time they'd ask me to go out, I'd come up with some other lame, false excuse for why I couldn't go out. The truth was, I just couldn't afford to go out. And they finally saw through it. And what had happened was, it was right around the holidays, and I was a key figure. I wasn't in charge of it, but I was one of the figureheads for a charity, a food drive, because the author that I represented would do food drives every once in a while, and so I wasn't in charge of it. There was other people in charge of it, but because I owned the franchise, I had to be kind of visible with it. And I vividly remember we were going around Seattle, Washington, giving bags of food to homeless people, and I vividly remember thinking, I wish I could eat the food in that bag. And what happened was two of my friends, Mason and Tina Hall, great friends. I don't really keep in touch with them anymore, but I consider them dear people and love them, and they've literally changed my life. they came to my door, and they had food, and they were in the bags, and they came up, and they said, hey, we have some food left over from the food drive, and we didn't know what to do with it. Since you were in charge, we thought we'd give it to you, which, of course, was being inauthentic on their part, but they were doing it to protect myself and my emotions, which was fine. I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. Looked inside. Of course, it's all my favorite food. It's dog food for my dog. And I broke down and I started bawling like a baby in front of Mason and Tina. And Tina, by the way, just to show you how bad this was, Tina was my old high school crush. And you can't get much lower than having your old high school crush donate food to your
house. That would be crushing. It was pretty
bad. And it was the best day of my life. It was the most miserable day of my life, or one of, I should say. But it was one of the best days simply because what it did is it literally, that thing just obliterated my ego, Damon.
Mm-hmm.
It just shattered it. And I'd like to say I don't have it anymore, but I'm sure it's built back up over the years. But it got me to a place where I just had no ego. And I just realized I needed to admit that I was just a false, lying, hypocritical, inconsistent jerk. And, you know, when I got to that point, that's when I was able to start, you know, just getting real. And you know, the metaphor that I use, and I use this a lot in the seminars that I talk about, is you know, the old cliche of, you know, your goals are the rewards at the end, you know, and your treasure map or you know, a treasure map is how you get to your goals kind of a thing, you know.
Yeah.
And the fact is, you know, maps are great. But if you don't know where you're at on a map is utterly useless. It
mm-hmm.
does absolutely no good if you don't know where you're at on that map. And I think a lot of times, especially in the personal development field, Damien, most people deny where they're at on the map.
Mm.
I see this all the time. You know, I'll go to a seminar, and I'll say, how you doing? And they go, I'm doing great, man. Life is fantastic. It's awesome. It's great. You know, and they're just rolling around, jumping up and down, talking about how great life is.
Mm.
And yet, this is a person who is breaking a sweat when they run their credit card through for dinner that night, hoping it doesn't get declined.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and this is the same kind of person who goes home and their spouse is yelling at them for wasting so much money on personal development seminars, and they think that they got their heads in the clouds. And
what would be a better approach or a more empowering approach, let's say if someone did find themselves in that situation, to really start making some fundamental changes that would put them on a much more powerful path?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'm going to jump ahead and then I'll jump back, okay, Damien? I read
sure.
through the questions that everybody sent through, and there's some underlying themes in those questions. And one of the underlying themes in a lot of those questions was, how do I become authentic? How do I get to this level where I'm authentic all the time? There seemed to be kind of like there was almost like an energy in a lot of the questions. It was like, how can I stay authentic? How can I be authentic? How can I live that authentic life? And I think the only way, this is just me talking.
Mm.
For me, the only way I've ever been able to really acknowledge that I can live an authentic life is to accept the notion that I am inherently inauthentic. I am fallible.
Mm.
You know, it's like if you've ever seen that, well, you've seen me at my seminars, Damien,
yeah.
You know, like I don't pull any punches. I mean, I sit there and I tell people, you know, I tell people, I say, hey, I'm 30, well, now I have to say I'm 39 because I turned 39 4 days ago.
Yeah.
You know, I say, you know, I'm 39, I'm single, I've never been married. Folks, I've got issues. and I don't deny that, you know, and here's a master trainer of NLP, you know, as a master trainer of NLP, I should be telling people, oh, well, when you go to an NLP seminar, you'll be able to have great relationships, you'll be able to lose weight, you'll be able to stay focused on your dreams and your goals, and you'll be able to succeed much more faster than anybody else, and yet I would be a hypocrite if I said that, knowing that my relationship is absolutely non-existent at this point in time, you know, I'm single. So for me, the only way to be authentic is just to sit there and just acknowledge the inauthenticity. That I acknowledge it, and I don't try to fight it. But something that, you know, you've heard
yeah.
the phrase, what you resist persists,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's like the more you resist your inauthentic nature, the more it's going to stick around.
Yeah.
So if you can just get to a point where you just go, yep, sometimes I'm pretty fake, you know?
I really think that's irony.
You know, a guy is talking about authenticity right now, and my first 6 front teeth are fake. If you just acknowledge it and be okay with it, then inherently in acknowledging that inauthenticity, that's when you get real. That's when you become authentic, I think.
I think that's a really powerful idea, and I just thought it's worth repeating that. Just accepting inauthenticity, I think that's really quite profound. guess it really is just acknowledging, I guess, what we were talking about earlier, like wherever you are on that map, just that starting point is really just working out where you are.
Yeah,
before you actually try and go anywhere else.
Yeah, I have a great story that I tell from time to time about my first ever adventure in life that I ever had, like my own independent adventure, was when I was on a business trip in Dallas, Texas. I was 19. First time I'd ever really been out on my own, you know, had my own rental car and dropped off all the other workers, and I was staying in Texas by myself. And I remember I got in the car, and I never read a map before. I never even knew how to read maps, really. Nobody ever taught me how. So I got my little Avis car rental map thing, you know, which is pretty crappy in and of itself. And I pull out, and I knew that I needed to head east to get to my hotel. But the map didn't say east or west on it. You know how maps just say N, but
yeah,
they don't say E, W, or S?
Mm.
I'm assuming they have to paper letter or something, so they just save money by not printing the other three letters. And I didn't know, I hate to admit it, I didn't know which direction east and west were on a map. So, I'm sitting here, and I'm like, I don't know which way to go. And I said, to hell with it, I'll just drive. So I got on the freeway, and I just started driving, having a great time, 19 years old, you know, woo, feeling great. Well, you know, after a while I realized, okay, none of this place looks familiar. I'm probably going the wrong way. I should turn around. And, you know, typical guy, didn't want to ask directions. And I just kept driving around. And to make a very long story short, I drove close to 500 miles that night. And I was miserable. You know, by the time I finally got back to the hotel, the sun was starting to come up. And the only way I finally got home was finally I had to actually admit to one of the gas, because, like, I'd go into the gas station, right, and I'd ask for help.
Yeah.
And they'd say, head east. And I'm like, I don't know which way east is. But I didn't want to tell them that I couldn't read that on the map.
Yeah.
And finally, when I just finally go, I don't know which direction that is, that's when I was able to get home. So,
yeah.
You know, the biggest thing is just realize that, you know what, if you don't know where you are, look around. You don't have to ask, by the way. Just look around. You'll find out where you're at, you know. If you don't know on the map, look around and look at the obvious things. Did you finance your car for more than 3 years? Okay, you're being inauthentic. At the end of the month, you're not having any money left, you're probably being inauthentic because you're trying to live a life that you can't afford. That type of a thing.
Okay, some good tips there. Now, I also want to, I guess, add a little bit more context to the call as well, just in terms of the way society is moving overall.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was just wondering if you could share what you thought were the biggest challenges that people just generally are confronted by with the way that the world's moving. With, I suppose we're living in an increasingly media-driven society, and as a part of that media-driven society, many of us are just confronted with marketing messages on a constant basis. But I just wanted to hear from you, Tapper, what do you actually see as the major challenges in today's society for living an authentic life?
I think we have too high standards.
Okay.
I think the primary message that's sent out there right now is a message of perfection.
Mm.
You know, we're looking at photoshopped bodies on magazines, but it goes beyond that, by the way. I mean, that's the easy target. We can pick on the model magazines and pick on them, but those are the ones that are at least, in fact, if anything, I think probably those are the more realistic ones, because they're not trying to cover it up. They're like, yep, we know we're all about beauty and glitz and glam, and we don't even deny that we Photoshop our pictures. They admit it, you know?
Yeah.
It's the ones that are more dangerous than that are the messages where, like, you know, we have maybe there's this standard that says that you should be married by a certain age, you should have a certain number of kids, you should have a certain size house, you start a certain type of a car, and all of those things, which are generally created through society, which is that element of perfection.
Yeah.
And, that was the biggest inspiration behind writing the book, Stop Chasing Perfection and Just Settle for Excellence, which is like, you know what, if we realize that we don't have to go for that all elusive thing called perfection, which you'll never get anyway, you know, excellence, that ain't too bad. You know, I'll take an excellent life over striving for perfection life any day.
Yeah.
And I think what happens is, I think we just, as a general rule, we set our standards too high. And frankly, you know what, I got to say, I think we are the ones to blame. The personal development people are probably the worst out of all of this, you know?
Yeah.
You go to these seminars, and most of these seminar leaders are telling you that if you follow these 12 steps to success, you'll make $1 million in 6 months, and if you do this, you'll have a great body, and if you do this, you'll have a great relationship. And almost all these self-help people are trying to create this path to perfection.
Hmm.
But they don't say that, obviously, because nobody probably buy their product, but that's really kind of what they're doing, and I think it's almost doing a disservice because people are becoming disenfranchised or dissatisfied with middle class. Man, I was raised middle class. I liked middle class. Ain't nothing wrong with middle class, you know? I always I joke around and say, you mess with me, you mess with the whole trailer park.
And was there a pivotal moment for you, Tucker, where you actually just decided to stop chasing perfection, or was there a time when you were chasing perfection and decided, you know, this isn't working?
You know, I don't know that I have stopped. You know, I mean, I like to think I have, but I think if I really have stopped chasing perfection, I'd probably be married by now. But you know, I think it's pretty obvious. You know, if I'm 39 years old and I haven't had a serious relationship, I'm still looking for that perfect girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
So you know, in some areas, yes, I've definitely let that standard go, and other ones I haven't. And I'm just okay with that. Like, I'm fine with it now. But I think probably, where did that happen? It probably just happened in the last couple of years, to be honest, Damian. You know what it's like? It's like the analogy I use is kind of like, you know, a reformed drug addict. They can be out on the street, and they can look across the street, and they can see a deal going down from, you know, from 50 yards away. Mm. They don't have to hear what the people are saying, but they can just see it. They can pick up on the energy. They know, oh, there's a drug deal going down. They can just, they're there, right? Mm. I'm that way with fake seminar speakers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, you know, I got this DVD in the mail, and it was this, I think it was called like the Winner's Circle, which was this thing in America where I could pay these guys $5,000 to join and be surrounded by winners. You know, these successful speakers, and we get together on a quarterly basis to practice our speaking skills, right?
Yeah.
And I looked at this DVD of people who had already paid up their $5,000 or $10,000. I think it was $10,000, come to think of it, actually.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at it, and on the DVD, literally, I could just go, that dude makes less than $40,000. That person doesn't even make a penny. That person makes less than $60,000. I never confirmed it, but I'll bet you anything. I would bet my entire year's salary that I hit it on the button within $15,000 a year on every single person I looked at on the video. And there was like only one person on the video that I think probably even made more money than I did. Not that money's that, you know, standard, but these guys are talking about how, you know, it's the winner's circle, they're so successful. I was like, these guys don't even, they're not even successful speakers, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I can see that, and it's just happened over the last couple of years. I guess I've just seen it so much more, and it's getting more and more out of hand, more and more out of hand. I kind of got to a point where I just thought, God, this is just getting obnoxious, you know? So
yeah.
Many people are getting sucked into so many false ideals and false, like, there's this guy right now out here in London. I don't know, he's not in London, but he's definitely permeating the market. His website, his latest website says, I made £2.7 million last year and I never left my house.
Mm.
And if you read through the ad copy, he later then in the ad copy talks about he makes upwards of £3,000 a day. I think it was £3,000, I don't know. You know, selling this product. And I'm thinking up to £3,000 a day. Well, I multiplied that by 365. It didn't equal 2.7 million. Even his ad copy was inconsistent. And I also know the guy. And I know there's no way in heck the guy made 2.7 million pounds.
Yeah.
Yet people believe it.
Yeah.
People buy it. And I think, you know, people can start getting a little bit more open-eyed, a little bit wise, maybe just doing their due diligence and vet out these people. And honestly, I don't know which one's worse. I don't know if it's the speakers that are putting out this false ideal or if it's the people believing them. I don't know, but all I know is I'm just I want to send a completely different message in my seminars, and that one is that, you know what, I don't like to ever tell people that they're going to make a certain amount of money in a certain amount of time when they come into my programs. I don't want to tell them they're going to lose a certain amount of weight. I actually don't like making those types of promises because, I first off, it's not true. You know, the seminar industry, for example, Damian, statistically, I'm going for averages here. I always say that the seminar business is about helping a lot of people a little bit and a few people a lot.
Yeah.
So the best thing to do is to set your price point at a price point where if they come to the seminar and they get a little bit out of it, they got their money's worth.
Yeah.
And then for the people who get a lot, they get more. They get 10, 15, 20 times their value. That's a great thing to do. I'd venture to say probably less than 3% of people that go to seminars actually apply what they learn.
Yeah.
So it's not true to be able to sit there and have all these marketing and say, oh, you're going to make this amount of money and blah, 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 blah. You know? And, by the way, all marketing is inherently inauthentic anyway.
Yeah.
I'll give you on top of that, like, here's the thing. Once again, it's not about being or living an authentic life all the time. It's just about just acknowledging your level of fakeness, if you will. I'll give you a great example of this. I think you know this guy. This is maybe going to sound like an insult in the beginning, but at the end, it's going to be a compliment. I've got a dear friend here in London. I love the guy. He's awesome. His name is Dan Bradbury. Have you met him yet? Dan Bradbury is a marketing genius. He really is a brilliant marketer. He's a young punk. The kid's all, I don't know, 20, 21 years old. And he is all about money. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't care about anything other than money. He knows how to make money. We hired him as an independent contractor to come out and help us out and, you know, design some of our marketing pieces and whatnot. And the funny thing about Dan is that Dan makes absolutely no apology for his greed.
Mm.
He, you know where you stand with Dan 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's all about the money. Mm. Now, there's some people who would sit there and probably accuse him of being inauthentic because he's giving in to cultural needs about making money and blah, blah, blah. And that's like there was a question that we had from one of the questions about, like, how do we live in a Western world and stay authentic? Well, you know, here's a guy, here's Dan, who's totally given in to the Western culture. It's all about money, 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 money. But he acknowledges that. And you know what? I got to tell you, my trust factor with Dan is a hell of a lot higher than most people because I know exactly where I stand with him any given day. He is one of the most authentic people I have ever met.
Yeah.
And yet, he's making a lot of money.
Yeah. I think that they should actually go hand in hand. Like, the more authentic you are, there's no reason why you shouldn't make lots of money.
Yeah, you know, and I got to tell you, there was kind of a presupposition in some of these questions that some of the people asked, which was, you know, how can we justify sacrificing money and being authentic? And it was like, well, you don't have to exchange one for the other.
Yeah.
In this past year, for example, Damien, I've probably become more true and authentic from the front of the room, and I'm just telling people about my faults and my problems, and I've been letting them know and giving them a realistic approach to life as best I can guess.
Yeah.
And this year, I made more money than I've probably made in my entire life combined. I mean, my sales went through the roof this year, and I attribute it to the notion that I'm creating a message which hopefully is fresh and new for people, which shouldn't be fresh or new at all, which is, you know, hey, get real.
Yeah,
I was talking to a good friend of mine today, Tim Brown. He's an NLP trainer, does corporate training, one of the most successful NLP people in corporate world. And I forget what we were talking about a common friend of ours who's got this dream that he's trying to succeed at. He's got this new business venture, and he's struggling a little bit right now. And his whole approach to achieving this dream is unrealistic.
Yeah.
You know, he's got this ideal that says, well, I want to do something that nobody's ever done, and I want to do it this way, and this is how I'm going to do it. And I looked at the marketing plan, I was like, that's just not going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
It's overly optimistic, and it's a little bit Pollyanna, and it's not going to happen. He's got to get a little bit more realistic. And the statement that I made to Tim today is I said something like this. I said, you know, if you got a dream, if you want your dream to become real, you need to bring the dream into reality. You can't live in the dream world all the time. And I think a lot of people in self-help, they're trying to get into the dream world, and they should be actually taking their dreams and bringing them into reality.
Yeah. That'd be very, very powerful.
Yeah.
Okay, Chuck, I'm actually going to specifically, we did get a lot of questions through the site, but I'm going to actually specifically pick out a few that I thought were quite poignant and would actually bring some real richness to this discussion.
Yeah, can I just say, by the way, I looked at these questions and I got intimidated. I was like, holy crap, I don't know the answer to any of them. These things were deep. I don't know who these people are in this teleconference, Damien, but you hang out with some pretty deep folks.
Well, we'll see how you go, you tougher. Put you on the line. Okay, we've got a question here from Vanda, and her question was, what's the best way to work out my own authenticity? I guess for most people, that whole conditioning process starts very, very young, so if someone is feeling off that authentic path, how do they actually work out what's authentic for them?
You know what, and that's one of those questions I was like, wow, geez, I don't know. For me, I think it's this. I don't think people have a hard time knowing what their authenticity is. I think people know it. I think what happens, though, is they won't step into it. Like, intellectually they get it, but they don't apply it, kind of a thing.
Mm.
And I think we've kind of touched on this. This is my own theory. I don't know. I could be full of it. But who says you have to be authentic all the time?
Mm.
right? Like, once again, this whole aspect of perfection. What would be the perfect ideal, Damian? The perfect ideal would be to be authentic 100% of the time, every single day, 24 hours a day. Man, I'm not even there yet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So instead of saying, okay, well, how do I get, you know, so I guess the answer to the question is this, baby steps. Do it a little bit at a little bit. Build it up like a muscle. Telling the truth, being real and authentic, both with yourself and with other people, is not easy. You know, there's a lot of fear there, right? It's a scary thing. So do what's comfortable, right? Do what you can. Do it to the degree that you can. And the more you stretch, here's what I'm experiencing. What I'm experiencing is this. The more authentic I am and the more truthful I am with people, the more I realize that all of the freaking out that they would have done if I would have told them the truth, because, like, the reality is most of the time when we don't tell the truth, when we're not real to people, it's because we feel that they can't handle the truth. Which is really arrogant, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, here, I'm sitting here with the truth inside my soul and my mind and my body, but I dare not express that to my friend Damian, because he'll just go off the deep end. How arrogant, right?
There's that, that classic line in A Few Good Men by Jack Nicholson, when he tells Tom Cruise that he couldn't handle the truth in the courtroom. But, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and most people can. Most people can handle it much more than we give them credit for.
Yeah.
But we need to build up those references. Just like we've built up references in other areas of life. So start with things that are small. I think that's probably the best way to implement your authenticity is just say, okay, I'm going to do one thing today which scares the hell out of me with authenticity, but I'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then go from there.
That's really good practical advice.
Yeah.
Now, we've got a question from Sally, and Sally wanted to know, how do you really get really clear on your own authentic dream so that you can set your course and stick to it? I'm attracted to several possible paths and find it difficult to commit to one specific direction. So how do you actually, I guess, connect with that real authentic dream, Topher?
My guess here on this one is this. She's placed too much importance on the achievement of the dream or the goal.
Okay.
And as a result, she thinks that she has to pick one path or this one or that one. Goal setting itself, going for a dream, is, in my opinion, never ever about achieving the goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about giving you momentum to move somewhere.
Mm.
I would have to say that, you know, it's funny, there's this guy right now who's going around teaching goal setting workshops, and it's the common message that's out there. And what he does is, and I got to give a guy testimony because he's achieved a lot of his goals, right?
Mm.
So he's got this list of things he's created, and he talks about how he's achieved almost all of his goals in his life.
Mm.
And that's cool, and that works, and that's great. It doesn't work for me, but that, if it works for him, that's awesome, right?
Yeah.
For me, if I were to admit, I'll tell you right now, Damian, I have probably achieved less than 20% of my life's goals.
Yeah.
Because what happens is, I set the goal, it creates momentum, I start moving toward it, but then on that path, I find something which is so much more rewarding, that I let go of that one and I go for another one. The only difference between me and most people is that I'm okay with that, like I accept it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, okay, you know what, that was my goal, that was my dream, and now I've let it go.
Yeah.
Because this is so much more appealing to me. And to me, that kind of, the question from Sally kind of almost, it seems to insinuate that there's too much importance placed on the outcome, not on the momentum.
Okay.
And goal setting is just about creating movement in your life, you know, because if you're not moving, you're slipping.
Yeah.
You're
I do want to just highlight one thing you said there, Topher, about letting go. Now, I suppose a lot of people that I come across in the work that I do have like an old goal or an old authentic dream, and literally it doesn't actually light them up anymore. But what they haven't done in their mind is actually let that dream go,
right,
so they can clear space and actually bring something in that's far more exciting and vibrant and alive for them. I was just wondering if you could spend just a bit of time just really, I guess, keep, like, helping people get closure on particular ideas that were relevant maybe a year ago, but having gone or walked a path, that those ideas are no longer relevant. How do people actually close those thought forms down in their minds, and why actually should they?
Well, I think the cause of that is mainly just ego, you know. I'll give you an example with me. When I purchased this franchise, for example, with this best-selling author, before I even called the company, I put in a 6-week letter of resignation to the company that I was currently working for. I was the corporate training director for a company up in Spokane, Washington. And I saw this ad. This was a guy that I admired. I said, I'm going to go work for him. I put in my resignation, and then I called their company. And after I called the company, I was really excited. I was going to own this business. I was going to get up on stage and teach these great things. And then come to find out that this company that I was buying was a multimedia company. So instead of me doing the speaking, I was actually just playing videos of this guy, and then I would basically set up the video and then sit in the back of the room, which to me really was denying my own gift and my own talent, which is, I think, up at the front of the room.
Mm.
And my ego kept me from backing out of that deal. In my heart, I didn't want the franchise. But I'd already told all my buddies, I told all my friends that I was going to own this company. And so what happened was my ego got in the way, and it kept me from getting authentic and true, which is, I really don't want this franchise anyway.
Mm.
I would have been far better off not buying the franchise, taking all the money I spent on the franchise and applying it to creating brochures and marketing program for my own seminars, which would have been, I would have been much more, I just never could sell it, And the funny thing is, I really admire and love the author. I just didn't think that, I just didn't feel comfortable charging this money and having people watch a video of it. I wanted to be the guy speaking. So I think what, I don't know what I have an answer for, Damien, but I know that there's something to do with ego there. And if you could just set aside that ego for just a moment and realize that, you know what, we all change our minds. You know, it's so frustrating sometimes you see, well, I don't know if you guys have it over here, but I think in America we have so many, like politicians, right?
Mm.
And the media just picks them apart. Like they'll make a statement 7 years ago, and then now they have a new position in life, and they're trying to, and they go, "Really? Is that how you feel? Well, let's play the clip," and then they play a 7-year-old clip. And they get all righteous on these politicians because they said one thing 7 years ago, and now they're saying the exact opposite thing. And I'm thinking, man, how would that reporter like to have somebody have a camera follow them around and see what they were saying 7 years ago and compared to what they're saying right now? Right? We all change our minds. It's just a part of human nature. And I think if we can just accept and just know that, you know what, it's never about the goal. It's just about the momentum. That momentum propels you toward the other things you like even more. No shame in that. No harm in that.
Brilliant. That's really good advice. Now, we have a question from Tara, and it's around beliefs. And there were quite a few questions that came through on beliefs, but I thought Tara's was quite a good one. And Tara asked, like, how do I ensure I am being true to myself based on my beliefs rather than the beliefs of others?
I read that question, and honestly, I have no answer for it. I don't know that you can, I mean, I like to sit, maybe I could sit here and talk from an etheric standpoint, or a metaphysical standpoint and stuff like that. But the reality is we are all impacted and influenced by other people. They wouldn't be on this phone call listening to me if they weren't allowing at some level my dialogue to be influencing them in some respects. So I don't even know that it's about, I don't think it's a problem, in other words, to accept beliefs of other people. Just make sure that when you're accepting beliefs of other people, those beliefs ring true for you.
Mm.
And if you, I'll give you a great example, okay? So I've been to, I don't know how many seminars I can count. I can't count them all, right? And I'll go to seminars and I'll hear advice from people. And the advice works for them, but it doesn't work for me. I just sort of go, God, I don't know. I can't tell you how many times I've tried to implement a strategy that somebody's talked to me that in my gut just didn't work for me personally, but it worked for them, so I thought I should accept it. Those are the beliefs I think we need to look out for. Right? If they're trying to, here's a great example. Right now I'm sharing with you guys some of my beliefs. One of my beliefs is lower your standards. Be happy with excellence. Stop striving for perfection. There are some people's personalities in this world, but that message would be completely detrimental for them and would completely have them live a life where they wouldn't be succeeding and wouldn't be making money. Those people aren't my audience. And they'll do themselves a favor by listening to that and going, yeah, Topher, if it works for you, great, but for me, that doesn't work. I want to go for perfection. I want to go for the best. And I'm like, great, not a problem. So I think what happens is when we get advice or when we hear beliefs from other people, we inherently know if it sits well with us or not, and then sometimes we deny that and we go, but if it worked for them, it'll work for us. And that's where I think we get a challenge. Probably one of the best examples of this, have you, Damien, have you taken the wealth dynamics profile that Roger Hamilton has?
I have actually.
I love that thing. If you
have like a really useful tool.
Listeners to it, by all means, let them know about it. I think it's one of the coolest things that I've come across in a long time, and here's why I like it. Because when you take that test, it tells you what the most natural way for you to make money is. Right? There are some people who just need to make money through multi-level marketing. But I myself just don't, that doesn't work for me. Right?
Yeah.
There are other people who need to make money by using other people's money. That doesn't work for me. Right? But, and And what I really loved about that whole wealth dynamics creation thing was that it allowed you to get true with your personal identity and what works best for you, not what works best for someone else.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I don't know where Roger's heading with that, but I would venture to say that there's an equal test that can be created for relationships and spirituality and health as well, to where we could find out, that way we don't have to rely on what other people are saying, or at least if we do, we find other people who match our same profiling system.
Exactly.
So I think that's, but my answer is basically this, you know, listen to the advice, but if it doesn't ring true for you, don't think you have to go that path. My path is not going to work great for everybody. Some people have already hung up on this phone call by now. God bless them. You know, because they're like, this guy's message is whack, I don't like it. Well, that's cool, I can appreciate that.
Great. I certainly can endorse that test. It's called Wealth Dynamics for people that are interested in it. But if you are, I guess the test is being delivered in an entrepreneurial context.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably a derivation of the Myers-Briggs test. But the great thing about what Roger's done is he's made that test become very real and very tangible and really easy for your mind to get around it.
Yeah.
And it's just probably one of the best ways of actually presenting a psychometric test that I've seen. So if you are looking to really connect with your entrepreneurial profile, I'd definitely recommend checking that out in more detail.
Yeah.
Now, talking about, we did touch on this earlier on in the call, Topher, around the fact that the last 12 months of your life, you've been getting more and more authentic from the stage, and you've noticed that your earnings have actually gone up as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had two very similar questions that came in from Helen and John.
Mm-hmm.
And their question was how to live an authentic life and also make a living at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondering if you could go into a little bit more detail about that process.
I'll give you a story with one of my heroes. His name's Dwayne. He's my brother. My brother Dwayne, he's 2 years older than me. And he was working as a maintenance guy. I don't know exactly what his role was, but he was doing something in the service and maintenance at a Nordstrom. Loved the job, had a great job, never did the same thing twice, was always repairing, fixing things. He was a real handyman. And would always go to this store called New Again, which was like a secondhand store, and he'd buy things and then fix them up and make them nicer and then sell them at a garage sale or something like that. Well, he eventually got a job working for them doing deliveries and became friends with the owners, and then they wanted to sell their business, and they sold it to my brother. Now, my brother really loved working for them and loved working for Nordstrom. All of a sudden has an opportunity to buy this company, and so he thinks that this is going to be a great route for him to provide for his family, so he buys this company.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes from working 40 hours a week to working 80 hours a week, 100 hours a week, you know, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was on his youngest son's fifth-year birthday. On Aaron's five-year-old birthday, Aaron wanted to go camping. So they packed up the bags and they went out camping. And my brother was sitting in a hammock looking at his kids, Aaron, who's five, Amber, who's seven, Alex, who's nine. And he didn't remember raising them.
Mm-hmm.
For 9 years of his life, he'd been giving blood, sweat, and tears to this company. And didn't remember these kids growing up, and he's like, I don't even know who these kids are.
Yeah.
He went home the next day, and he sold his, probably didn't sell it the next day, but the next day put it up for sale.
Yeah.
And within a month, he had sold that business, gotten out of it, and took a job working at a hardware store within walking distance of his house so he could be with his family.
Wow.
Isn't that an awesome guy or what? Talk about a real man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And here's a guy whose income dropped significantly. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not going to make a lot of money checking out screwdrivers at a hardware store, right?
Mm.
But he became a clerk at a hardware store so he could be with his kids.
Yeah.
Now, I will tell you that, Damien, is wealth.
Yeah.
You know, so I think what happens is the question there was inherently about money, not about wealth.
Mm.
Like, how can you make money? Forget about the money, you know? Go, if you're authentic and you're true with yourself, it doesn't matter what kind of money you make, you'll be happy. And the only reason people think they want to make all that money is so they can have this happy life anyway. Man, I got to tell you, I remember we did the rucksackathon with the Yes Group a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember we went out and we gave these rucksacks with food and stuff in it to the homeless people here in London. And we went to this one guy and he goes, no, I don't want it. I'm fine. And here's the guy who's like, no, I'm happy. I'm homeless. I have no stress. and it was like he was homeless by choice. You know, and there, I mean, that guy, I would submit that homeless guy was more wealthy and authentic than most of the people who are making over $1 million.
Yeah.
Really happy. I mean, and I got to tell you, man, I look at my brother to this day, and I think, man, here's a guy who's got a great life, and here me, man, you know, I'm 39, I'm single, I'm working my ass off 14 hours a day. Who's the fool here?
Yeah.
You know, I think it might be me. Maybe he's tapped into something. Who's wealthier? You know, am I wealthier than my brother? Honestly, I think my brother is a wealthier man than I am. Mm. Maybe I got more money, but at the end of the day, you know, you can't kiss your money goodnight. I mean, you can, but it's a little work, I suppose.
Mm.
Damn,
but I think, like, just with the whole idea with values as well, and just getting really clear about what your values are and then living in accordance with those values.
Most people don't know what they value in life.
Yeah.
As a result of not knowing what they value in life, they're never really going to find out what true authenticity is.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. Now, I've actually got a personal question, Topher. Now, like we spoke, like in the NLP world, there's a concept called modeling.
Yeah.
And I guess we sort of touched on the concept a little earlier on with the wealth dynamics profile, where there is a lot of different personal profiles, and actually modeling someone who has a dissimilar profile can actually be not really to your best advantage.
Right.
I was just wondering if you could actually bring a bit of context to how modeling through the use of NLP can be really useful for people, particularly if they are looking to live more authentically.
Yeah, you know what, I got to tell you, I'm a little torn on this one. This is one of those things where, you know, I'm so grateful for the gift known as NLP because it's absolutely changed the quality of my life. It's given me a career, and I'm very grateful for it. And yet, I think NLP has some of the most inauthentic people out there because they've confused modeling with plagiarism.
Mm.
And so for me, modeling is an internal process. It's not an external process of duplicating. I know several speakers that have quote-unquote modeled other speakers, but they really haven't modeled them. What they've done is they've stolen their material. They've stolen their jokes. They've stolen their, you know, they just basically are a rehash of some other speaker. You know, they take the best of everything they like, and then they just go and regurgitate all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And they say, they tell people, they go, look, see, I'm modeling these successful people, and therefore I'm producing these great results. And you know what? Yeah, they are producing results, I suppose, but they're really not, I don't think in my heart, I don't think they're modeling. I think they're copying. I think they're plagiarizing. I think they're, it's not an aspect. So for me, the difference is internal versus external. If you're just duplicating and doing what other people do, well, that's plagiarizing. It's duplicating, right?
Mm.
But if you're finding what the internal components are of that individual, and then those internal components work and reside with you and your identity, then if you work on that, then I think what you can do is you can produce the same results, but you don't have to do it using the same words and jokes and everything else that somebody does.
Yeah.
So, for example, you know, if we're going in the aspects of wealth, well, let's not do wealth creation. Let's do something else. Let's do relationships, right? Because, like, that's something that I really know a hell of a lot about. So, if you look at somebody who's got successful relationships. You know, I've heard some people say, you know, never go to bed angry at your spouse.
Mm.
And yet I know other people who say, you know, don't yell. You know, so there's all these different approaches to how to have a successful relationship or whatever. Well, you know, I've heard some people say, well, you should never let your eyes wander. But yet I'll see other people who, you know, joke about, you know, how that good-looking person's next door. And they say, well, as soon as they stop joking, that's when I need to be worried and things like that.
Mm.
I think if you can find, you know, what are the internal components that are there, then it doesn't matter what the behaviors are. So, for example, some people's internal component in a successful relationship, I would say, my guess, I don't know if I have any right to say this, would be trust. Yep. For everybody that I've ever met that is in a successful relationship, trust seems to be a very prevalent aspect of life, right?
Mm.
Some people get the trust by making jokes about being with other people.
Mm.
Other people get trust by never letting their eyes wander.
Mm.
So is it the behavior or is it the component, the element, the operating principle? And I think if we focus on the operating principles more so than the behaviors, then we're going to be able to model successfully. And by the way, those operating principles I also could call, I would say, universal truths.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if we're looking at being authentic, yeah, we all have our own behaviors of what's inauthentic and what's authentic, but they all apply to universal truths. There's some underneath in there, you know.
Brilliant. That would be a great topic for another call, actually. Yeah, we're literally coming to the end of our call, Topher, and literally,
I just wanted to thank... I'm so sorry, I talked too much, huh?
We've got some really fertile questions. We could, I just get the feeling we could actually go on and talk for quite a lot longer.
Yeah.
But before we actually, hopefully I'm... get a couple of calls from the line as well, a couple of questions from the line.
Certainly.
But before we actually do that, I just wanted to speak a little bit more about the mental game of life that is coming up this weekend in London. I had the good fortune of actually attending the mental game of life last year and personally took away some really powerful things for my own life, particularly the area around forgiveness. I thought it was really profound and delivered very, very... very, very well, and personally got some really powerful takeaways on it. But I was just wondering if you could, I suppose, talk a little bit more about the mental game of life and what people can expect from actually coming along on the weekend.
Sure. Well, if you're in the London area, or even if you're nearby and get on a plane, I'd love to have you there. The seminar is called The Mental Game of Life, and what happened was it was originally called The Mental Game of Money, and I went out, and using modeling technology, I went out and I read every book I could find on wealth creation, and contextually discovered that all of these books basically say five operating principles, five basic things. And so we called the seminar The Mental Game of Money, which was about how to generate, but we never made promises of making more money. It was just about changing your relationship with money. Well, we got some really weird testimonials coming back from people saying like their relationships were better, or you know, maybe they lost some weight, and you know, then we had some ones who were about money, but really it encompassed all areas. And then I realized that, you know, these five mental rules, they weren't really about money at all. They were about prosperity. They were about abundance in any area.
Mm.
And so we felt that the title was inaccurate, and so we rebranded it to call the Mental Game of Life, which is really about how to create more wins more consistently in your life by changing the rules to win. So, for example, I tell at the seminar a story about a guy named Marcus Bach, who's one of my mentors. He's the author of 29 books on religion. He's Richard Bach, Jonathan Livingston Sigel's his uncle. And I asked him one time, I said, what has to happen for you to be happy, Marcus? And he goes, I just set the rules up to make it easy. You know, and that's kind of where the inspiration came from. And so it's not a seminar that's going to make you more money or, you know, make you, you know, 2 inches taller or, you know, lose weight or whatever. But here's what it'll do. It'll give you some tools and some techniques to realize that you can change the rules in life to be able to create more wins consistently and be happy. And that's really what it's about. And it's an introductory program. It exposes you through a little bit of hypnosis, a little bit of NLP. And our sincere hope is that if you hang out with me for 2 days and you like that for a real cheap price, well, then maybe you might want to come on to one of our more expensive programs, but might as well take me on a test drive first and see if you like it. The seminar itself is only £49. That's a very good price. That's the cost of a modest dinner for two here in London.
Yeah.
And I'll give you 2 days of my heart, my soul, my energy, my passion. I mean, Damien, you went to the seminar. You know. I mean, I don't...
I was actually just blown away. Just watching,
I give it all
it's not
out.
Just from the stage as well. Like, I just really noticed behind the scenes, Topher, like, you didn't... You're not the kind of speaker that will deliver a performance or a speech or a keynote and then leave the stage and then, like, you never see the guy again. Like, you're literally with people until long after the seminar had finished, just giving of your time, giving of your energy, much in the same way that you've given freely of your energy this evening. So,
yeah. it's kind of weird, actually. I mean, I see all these speakers, you know, and they get off and they run backstage and they don't talk to people, and that just, to me, defeats the whole purpose of being on stage, you know. I mean, I want to connect and meet people. And it's kind of funny, I remember at the last Mental Game of Life, seminar hadn't started yet, and I'm walking around in the audience talking to people. I couldn't get people to come up and talk to me. I was like, hey, you want to be my friend today? But it's only £49. We do have some additional tickets available, like if you want to upgrade to some VIP packages and stuff like that. But you can just go to the website and find out. It's called thementalgameoflife.com. Just go to www.mentalgameoflife.com. It's pretty simple. And you can sign up there if you want to go. Like I said, it's only £49. You know, if you like it, you're going to get way more than £49 worth of value. If you don't like it, you're going to lose £49, but you'll still survive. You know, you probably lost more than that, lived okay.
Yeah, brilliant. I know that is incredible value.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to see if we have any people on the call that have a pressing question about the subject matter that we've discussed this evening.
Sure.
So I'm just going to swap it over to question mode, so bear with me 2 seconds.
Conversation mode is on. Everyone can now be heard. Q&A mode is on. Participants may now unmute themselves.
Okay, now if you have a question for Topher, if you can just press 6 on your handset to unmute your line, And once you've actually asked your question, I'll just ask you to press 6 again to mute your line so we have a nice clean recording. I'm just wondering if anyone had a question about authenticity or true self-expression. If you just wanted to press 6 to unmute your line and ask away.
Hello, Damien. Can you hear me?
Hi, I can, yes.
Damien and Simon from
London. Hi, Simon.
Hey, Simon. Good, thanks very much. Thank you, Topher. I've just got a question. You were hinting a lot about this at the beginning of the conversation about the obstacles that we put in our own way to being authentic, and one that I'm familiar with, and I'm sure a lot of people are, is this thing of not wanting to hurt other people. Mm-hmm. And of course we can even do that in our more intimate relationships and go through a great deal of pain.
Right.
Because we're too afraid to tell people our truth. Mm-hmm. And I guess I wonder also, where does that come from, that kind of behavior, as well as what to do about it? I appreciate what you said about taking small steps, but where does it come from?
Well, I can actually give you an anthropological answer to that question, at least on the male side. I don't have an answer on the female side. But there's an anthropological reason why men instinctively lie, especially to women. From the beginning of the caveman days, you know, our whole job was to protect the female, right? Because if she died, we couldn't procreate. So it was on our best interest to protect women. That's what we had to do. And what's happened is that is ingrained in our primal brain. It's been true for thousands and hundreds of thousands, millions. I don't know how old the human being is, but it's been around for a dang long time. We've always had to protect the female. Well, that's changed in the, you know, if you look at the span of evolution in terms of since human beings have been around, the amount of time that women haven't needed men to be protecting them is literally less than a blink of an eye. So our DNA is not even accustomed to the notion that women don't need us to protect them. And so and by the way, this is how modern it's been. It only goes back to the women's lib movement. So we're talking literally, you know, if you look at the evolution of time, it's only been over the past 30 to 40 years where all of a sudden now women are stepping up and saying, we don't need you, the male, to protect us. And so what's happening is from an instinctive level, we're freaking out. Our DNA doesn't know what the hell to do right now. And we're desperately searching for a way to protect women. There's no pterodactyls that are going to kill them. You know, there's no Tyrannosaurus Rex. So there's no gunfighters. There's nothing like that anymore. The only thing that men have to protect women against right now is their feelings. And so what we've done is we've kind of just gravitated to where the only area we can protect them is in their feelings. God, guys, don't we hate them? Don't we hate them to see them cry? We can't stand it when women cry. I don't know about you, but I can't stand it. Don't cry, whatever you do. And so what happens is we instinctively think, because we're the stronger of the species, quote unquote, right? Probably not true, but we think we are. We think we have to protect them. So what we do is we protect them from the truth because we don't think they can handle it. Now, the irony, by the way, is that the women actually can handle the truth, probably even better than we can, but their mechanism, their coping mechanism for truth doesn't coincide with our DNA. How does a woman deal with truth? They bawl, they cry, they express their emotions, and we're like, don't do that, it freaks us out. So we're under the illusion that when they're crying or when they're freaking out emotionally, that they're not handling the truth. But in fact, they're handling it. Right? They're actually perfectly in control and handling it. They just do it in a different way than we do. So now, why women lie to men, I don't know. I haven't figured that one out yet. But instinctively, our whole job is we want to protect them. So once we can get through and break through our instinctive nature to lie, to protect them from the truth, once we can realize and acknowledge that women are far stronger than we give them credit for, and they would much rather prefer the truth, we just may not like the coping strategies that deal with it, then we can do much better. Now, obviously, hopefully, if women hearing this message can hear that as well, then maybe they could be sensitive to that and realize that, we don't really know how to handle that when you start crying on us, and just find a different way, if you could, at least in front of us, to where we're under the illusion that you're handling it better. Well, then it could work out real well, too, but then that may be denying their own authenticity. I don't know. But I don't know if I answered your question, but the reason why we do it, it's a self-preservation thing. We think we need to protect them. And if we don't protect them, we lose the ability to procreate. So the solution is we need to realize that women don't need our don't need ourselves or don't need us to protect them anymore. They're perfectly fine on their own, and they can absolutely handle the truth.
Very helpful. Thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks, Simon. That was a great question and also a great response, Topher. All I've got left to say is really thank you very much. This is certainly not the first time that you have been on one of my teleseminars, and I certainly hope it's not the last.
I would love to do more.
I've done quite a few of them,
and I think you're about the only one that I know that does them as professionally as you can. I mean, I'm really impressed with the way you handle them. They're fun.
No, it's always enjoyable and always just generate really powerful insights from the words that you share. And just to sort of recap on the Mental Game of Life seminar that is coming up this weekend, it's on the 26th and 27th of January, Saturday, Sunday, at the Hilton Tower Bridge Hotel. Tickets range or start at $49 for the weekend. £49, sorry. And if people do want to grab a ticket, the best place for them to go is www.mentalgameoflife.com. And then just to re-emphasise, like I have been on the seminar for the 2 days and found it incredibly powerful, and you can be guaranteed that Topher will be giving all of himself over that weekend. So Topher, thanks very much. Thank you to everyone who's participated on the call, and hopefully we'll see you on a call very, very soon.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have a great night, everyone.
Bye-bye.